My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he is still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And hour number two, if you missed any part of hour number one, I encourage you to give it a listen. It is up on our audio. If you go to the listen section, that is already posted there. And David Shistokas, our constitutional originalist attorney, and I had some conversation about the building blocks for law and where that comes from, and who is the giver of law, and what happens to a society that casts that away. And so some great conversation there. I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest to the program. Have you ever thought about it? Maybe, you know, I mean, I come from the generation where we were taught, you know, if you take care of the little things, then the big things will take care of themselves. I mean, we were just taught that. Nowadays, they don't take care of big things or little things. I'm sorry, but I think it's a fact. Anyway, my next guest has written a book about how tiny blunders? Yeah. Tiny blunders have had huge, huge consequences historically. And I want to welcome to the program Jared Knott. Jared, welcome. Good to have you with me. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. Thank you, sir.
Oh, well, I feel like you might have maybe, possibly, we've met before, but I don't know that for absolute certain. But nonetheless, I'm really glad to have you with me this morning. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to be here. And I believe you're up fairly early in your part of the world.
Oh, it's 9 o'clock here. It's 9 o'clock, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Very good. Very good.
I was a long time ago. Right?
Okay. Good deal. Good deal. Well, talk to me. I mean, what was, and you have a background, you are a Marine?
Army.
Okay. You served in Vietnam.
Yes.
Talk to me about what got you started on the road of looking at these, what you know, like I said, the small things that had big consequences.
Yes, right. It's inspired, at least in part, by the old adage that comes down through Benjamin Franklin and others, that for want of the nail, the shoe was lost. For want of the shoe, the rider was lost. For want of the rider, the battle was lost. For want of the battle, the empire was lost. The empire was lost, all for the want of a nail. Well, that's a nice little saying, but how often does that really happen, that a single tiny mistake causes an entire empire to collapse? You will be amazed how often this happened over and over and over again. It's sort of like a butterfly effect in human history. A single tiny mistake, dominoes, 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 and you have a catastrophe at the end.
It's interesting when you say that, because I think about, there was a situation everybody knows about, David and Absalom, and about that particular situation, but Abishai was given an order to go and deliver a message on behalf of the king regarding another uprising, another Absalom type situation. And the word of God says that he delayed in going. And as a direct result of that, David said, now this situation might become worse than the Absalom situation because of the delay. And it was, in fact, one of the reasons why Joab killed Abishai was because he had delayed in delivering the king's order. And it led to Joab having to be killed or sentenced to death, but a death sentence carried out by Solomon before Solomon could assume the throne. So you talk about ripple effects, right? Little blunders having a large consequential impact on a nation's history.
Yes, you mentioned delay. In a completely different, non-biblical story that comes to mind when you say that, and that is the Great Fire in Chicago. Okay, it was started off as just a small little barn fire, and the fire department had put out 20 such fires in the previous month there in Chicago. But when they kind of called the fire department, they called the wrong phone number. They called the wrong number, and so they went to the wrong, gave the wrong address. They went to the wrong address. And by the time they realized the mistake and got to the correct address, the small barn fire had gotten out of control and burned the whole city down. It burned for a rain coming along. It would have been worse, but it burned just about the entire city of Chicago down simply because somebody gave them a wrong address and it caused the delay. But yes, that's an example of a tiny mistake leading to a huge disaster.
No doubt. What were some of the other, what are some that are going to be more familiar for us?
Yes, the very first one I thought of, it's been over 11 years ago when I first had the first concept, but the very first one I thought of was this one, the teaser is a single piece of tape rotated several inches the wrong direction, changed the outcome of the Vietnam War, the United States might very well have won except for this single tiny mistake, which doesn't make any sense at all, right? What are we talking about? But it has to do with the Watergate break-in. When they're breaking in a Jimmy DeLock from the parking garage into the office building, they were told to hold the striker on the door down with a single piece of tape in the vertical position so it could not be seen from the hallway. They made a mistake and they put it in the horizontal position where they should have been doing it, should not have been doing it in the first place. I mean, Frank Wills, the night watchman, comes walking down the hall, sees the tape on the door. What's this? George, Jimmy calls the Washington, D.C. police. He had to call them twice. But anyway, so the rumors that they contacted the uniformed officer who was on duty in that particular part of the city, but he was intoxicated in a local bar and could not answer the call. And so they had to send instead the bum patrol, which is three officers dressed as hobos in a jalopy car. Well, they pull up to the Watergate complex. The lookout does not recognize them as police officers. They go in, they arrest James McCord and the Cuban operatives, and Watergate begins. Boom, boom, boom. Henry Kissinger gave an interview on television back years ago, and he said the plan was to go in and bomb the North Vietnamese treaty that's been signed, and let's go back in there and bomb the living daylights out of the North Vietnamese to get them in compliance with the treaty that was signed. They were so weak politically, they could not. South Vietnam collapses. Nixon administration collapses. All falls apart because of a single piece of tape rotated several inches the wrong direction and a drunk cop.
Wow. Wow. And, of course, the other backstory behind that is that you know, the woman in the at the desk in the office next to that, I don't know if you knew this or not, but she was running a prostitution and drug ring for the CIA.
And that was
why they actually were doing the tape on the door to go in to begin with. Going in through that office was a front to be able to get into the office next door, because there was information that they wanted off of this operation and off of this situation, and they needed the president's stamp of approval on the operation. And so the CIA would get that approval then by going in through this back door. John O'Connor writes about that. He actually defended Mark Felt in I think 70. When did Carter go in? 76.
He was in 76.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in 76, Carter's DOJ went after Mark Felt, who was Deep Throat. But he went after Mark Felt for having prosecuted and put Bill Ayers in prison.
I see.
And so John O'Connor ended up defending Mark Felt, and he now has a book out that talks about, you might find it interesting, but it talks about the whole background of Watergate and that was the point at which, at that particular time, the FBI and the CIA really became enemies of a sort, because Hoover said, I'm not going to allow you, because they were running this ring and they were bringing in foreigners and Americans. They would drug them. They would get them in via the prostitutes. Then they would drug them in order to get information out of them.
I had no idea.
Isn't that crazy?
There's a whole big world there. When you start talking about the CIA, of course, the most recent development, I still don't know that I can accept this, but there is serious evidence to indicate, I guess it's shocking to even have to say it, that the CIA was behind the assassination of John Kennedy, which just seems like mind-numbingly impossible. But they admitted that they had a relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald. They admitted that much. And supposedly credible people have seen the evidence that they were then behind the assassination of John Kennedy, which is just impossible to believe. Although Robert Kennedy Jr. says that his uncle was assassinated by the CIA.
Well, it's interesting. Now, if you read the disinformation, hang on, I think I've got There's a DVD that I've got. I'll find it here in a minute. But it's called Disinformation. And it was done by General Pacheco. General Pacheco was the highest ranking former Russian intel officer that ever defected. He's the one that wrote the book Red Horizon that Ronald Reagan credits as being kind of his guide for how to unravel Gorbachev and the Soviet Union. Now, I was a Cold War Russian linguist in the United States Air Force. So I can tell you from the, you know, the training that I received that the disinformation that Pacheco talks about in that book is what we were trained to identify as linguists and as analysts during the Cold War. And so within that, it's interesting, you know, in correlation with the conversation that we're having, to understand how they manipulate certain beliefs. One of the prime examples is Pope Pius, who is identified as quote unquote the Nazi Pope, except that in 1959, Israel gave Pope Pius the highest award that they give to a non-Jew for having saved hundreds of thousands of Jews.
And yeah, just like Schindler, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and 4 years later, in 1963, after the Soviets had put out all of this disinformation and written a comic book about him and all this stuff that they sent out, suddenly he becomes known in history as the Nazi Pope. And, he worked with the Nazis and so on and so on and so on, which was all lies. But that's what most people remember about Pope Pius.
Well, yeah, people remember dirt a lot faster than they do with something that's positive. I mean, it's the scandalous and the juicy parts, easy part to remember. We might mention going way back in history.
Yeah.
There's also serious evidence to indicate that Secretary of War Stanton was involved in the Lincoln assassination conspiracy. That's another strange one. It's very hard to accept, but there was a definite conspiracy. Of course, there were six assassins directly involved, but then there was a conspiracy behind that with talking about all that was involved there. But again, history hides a lot of its secrets, and sometimes 50 or 100 years later, it comes to the surface, and sometimes it never comes to the surface.
Right.
There's that old quotation from Napoleon that history is a pack of lies mutually agreed upon. So what we have in history books, it may be 80% accurate, 50% accurate. I don't know if it reaches 90% ever or not.
I'm remembering. So when we talk about Kennedy's assassination, according to Pacheco, that was something, I think it was Khrushchev at the time.
Yes, I think so, yes. Yes, it was.
Okay, so he ordered the assassination of Kennedy over Cuba. And Pacheco says that was he ordered it. But obviously, if it ever, you know, at that point especially, if it had ever found its way back to the Kremlin in their investigation, we would have gone to war. We absolutely would have gone to war. So he worked with, and I think Robert Kennedy Jr. may be correct. Remember, you know, flashing forward now, Brennan, okay, colluded with other foreign intelligence, seven countries, to try to validate the phony Steele document because the CIA cannot spy on Americans. So he solicited these other intel buddies to write up reports about supposed American involvement with Russia and then submit those reports to Brennan to bolster this completely false narrative about the Steele dossier.
Absurdly false about the prostitutes urinating on the beds and all that sort of thing. It was absurdly false there. By the way, talking about Khrushchev ordering assassinations, there is also serious evidence to indicate that he did order the murder of Doug Hammarskjöld way back when, the UN representative director. And that's because he died kind of mysteriously in an airplane crash in Africa.
Okay.
Lincoln, there's a lot of, for years, there have been many serious questions about the involvement of Secretary Stanton and Lincoln's assassination. And John Wilkes Booth was part of a larger conspiracy that he was getting money from someplace. And of course, this is the most shocking one, but the John Kennedy being assassinated, possibly by the CIA involvement there, that's a whole thing. I can't mind saying it's true, but I'm saying there's serious evidence that it has to be taken seriously. So, Dr. Hammarskjöld, Abraham Lincoln, John Kennedy, and sometimes the truth bubbles to the surface 50, 60, 70 years later, and sometimes it doesn't. Now, I have another book in the pipeline. I'm working on Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters, number two, Even More Tiny Mistakes That Change the World Forever. And then behind that is another book, The Hushed Up Murders of Famous People. They murdered big and got away with it. And in that book, Stalin, speaking of assassinations, was assassinated by his number one assistant, Bera. He was poisoned, apparently. And then Stalin, in turn, there's serious evidence to indicate that he was behind the death of General Patton, as strange as that sounds. And the Russians had a well-developed system of poisons. They were poisoned. They poisoned many people over the years. Stalin killed many, many people over the years.
Sure.
And of course, Putin is another Stalin. He is.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Once KGB, always KGB. Come on.
Yes, and once the war was going so badly, it's still going badly in Ukraine, he was afraid a lot of the oligarchs and other powerful people were going to get together and try to get rid of him. Well, he was really several steps ahead of them. His murder squads had gone out and murdered a number of the oligarchs, and some of them had died from poisoning. Some of them, the kind of a dark comedy word called defenestration, which is not funny, I guess, the way, but defenestration, the word means to be being thrown out of a window. Okay, well, several of them have gone through defenestration, thrown out of a six-story window of a hospital, and so on and so forth like that. It's the list of murders that he's guilty of. So there's just the history is dripping with blood, not only in open wars, but also in assassinations from Putin, from Stalin. And, of course, then President Xi has killed many thousands and thousands and thousands of people. He's criticized him, he disappear. So it's just a murder incorporated out there. And we here in the United States don't realize, for all of our problems, how we are reasonably safe. It's reasonably safe to go to the grocery store and get a carton of milk.
Although the CCP is becoming very active in our food chain, and interestingly, I had someone on last week or somebody I was talking to about this, but the food chain and the food embargoes that Trump put on China were significantly impacting Xi's power to govern. And historically, that is one of the things that brings these Marxist regimes down. Because at the end of the day, that, you know, nobody wants to work. Why would you? Who's going to work when there's no benefit to doing anything? Everything comes from the government and everybody gets the same, whether you produce or don't produce.
Yeah, there's an old saying from Poland, that connection, that we, to your point, that there's an old saying there, whether you, kind of a Polish joke back during communism, that whether you stand up or whether you sit down, you get paid the same wage. But when that's the weakness of socialism. There's no reason to work hard. Yeah.
One of the things that we were, that was a part of, all of our instructors were Russian defectors. But one of the lectures that we had, I'll never forget, they were talking about, you know, they knew that if you were going to buy something that was made earlier in the week. Because at the end of the week, they were just trying to make quota. And so, like, shoe factories would have, you know, 10,000 right shoes, no left.
Okay.
You know, the pairs were made on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday on, forget about it. The sizes were off. They, you know, a 10 would be like a 9 3/4 or a 10 1/2. You didn't know. It was an absolute cluster. And of course, then, you know, the factory guy gets fired. They do 5-year plans. About 3 years in, they, you know, he gets sent to Siberia every time.
Speaking of Polish jokes, that's kind of in the connection with the weakness of socialism, but talk about the difference between what's the difference between capitalism and communism? Well, in capitalism, man exploits man. In communism, it's just the opposite.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's a mess up. Yeah. Hopefully, we're going to be turning around and heading in the right direction here. This guy said it's a whole big subject there, but hopefully, we're going to be heading in the right direction.
Really quick, we're going to run out of time. About a minute and a half left. Give us kind of an aha out of your book, real quick, and then we'll plug the book.
Yes, there was one key story people like a lot is the teaser is that a soldier accidentally kicks a helmet off the top of a wall, and it causes an entire empire to collapse. How's that possible? Well, it has to do with Cyrus the Great, who's mentioned in the Bible, by the way, very favorably. He's the one that gave the children of Israel their freedom from Babylon. But anyway, he was coming in a big conflict with the emperor of Lydia. And to make a long story short, Croesus was his name. Croesus from the expression richest Croesus. And he had the Spartans fighting on his side. And, of course, Cyrus the Great with the Persian Empire on the other side. So he had a big battle, okay, and it was kind of a draw. And so then Cyrus puts his men on the ship, and they sail away, okay? And then the Spartans go home, but they didn't call him Cyrus the Great for nothing. After about 6 or 7 days, he turns around, and he sails back, comes back in, has a second great big battle. Croesus loses, more or less, and pulls back into his great big huge fortress on Cyrus, okay? Cyrus.
Okay.
So the soldier accidentally kicks the helmet off the top of the wall. He goes rolling all the way down to the bottom. It was an impregnable fortress. And the soldier gets off the wall, climbs down a secret passageway down to the bottom, gets his helmet, climbs all the way back up. And one of Cyrus the Great's men sees him. Whoa, look. There's a secret passageway at the side of the wall. You go up there. But next night, the raiders go up there over the top of the wall, open up the gates. His army floods in, and they conquer Lydia. But if it had not been for that tiny mistake, instead of being called Cyrus the Great, he might have been called Cyrus the Chump.
Ah, wow. Who would have known, huh? Who would have known? Finding the things you reveal to your enemy when you're not looking, right?
That's right. And be careful with your clumsy feet.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Well, hey, thank you so much. Listen, folks, the book that you are looking for here, I went all the way to your sample chapters, but the name of the book, Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters. Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters, by Jared Knott. And you know, one of the things in there you might find interesting is he's got a story about what's referred to as America's royal family, which at one time they really truly were would be thought of in such grand terms. And of course, I'm talking about the Kennedy family, right? Everybody, you know, Camelot and that whole concept was a big part of the John Kennedy mystique.
Exactly right. And you go to tinyblundersbigdisasters.com, tinyblundersbigdisasters.com. We have 2.5 free chapters there. We have a book trailer, and we have the portrait gallery, one of my favorite parts of the book, 27 characters there with a little bit of dirt on each one.
There you go. Excellent. Jared, thanks so much. Hey, this has been a lot of fun.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. All right, we're going to take a break. Rick Manning is coming up with us next, president of Americans for Limited Government, and lots going on up on the Hill. Rick is right in the middle of all of it, and we'll get his insights regarding that coming up. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Back with more right after this brief break.
So up next, we have Clean Slate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. Clean Slate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your Clean Slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your Clean Slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topics off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. And very excited. Now, Monday, I had to take Monday off because I had a doctor's appointment on Monday, actually, relative to my injured eye from the accident. We had to take a look at some things, and we're going to be continuing to take a look at some things. I don't know. There's a few things that I'm going to have to deal with, but it's okay. God's got this, and I know that, and he'll handle it. But at any rate, I missed my time with my next guest, who usually co-hosts with me on Wednesdays and is usually with me on Mondays to start our week. But he wasn't there because I wasn't there. So I welcome my good friend, Mr. Rick Manning. Rick, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
You know what?
I want to correct a little bit. If you remember,
I was there.
You were.
We talked about it because
you were there. You called me.
I'm busy. Hey. I'm busy sitting on Zoom and saying, "Where's Pastor Greg?
Where are you?"
Alongside the road, doing the old,
Yeah, and I was, and I was doing the. I'm getting ready to go to the doctor's. So yeah,
it was. But nonetheless,
you know, Rick, can I quickly show? So this was, I don't know if I told you, but really quick, folks. So the doctor that I went and saw on Monday is the doctor who has been working on my face on the left side and overseeing that since the accident. And so almost to be 6 years in about 2 weeks, 6 years ago. When I would go to see her, I didn't go to see her till go to her offices until I was in acute care because I couldn't. And they literally would lift me. Well, no, they wouldn't even lift me. Would they lift me? Yeah, they lift me onto basically a gurney, but it was like a portable hospital bed, and roll me down the hall and put me into the back of an ambulance, and I would come by ambulance to her location. And I'll never forget the first time that I showed up because they didn't have anybody that came in a gurney. And they were like, oh, my gosh. So they literally had to scramble to find a room for me to roll into. And when she came in to see me, it was like, okay, I've read your file. And I just want to say I'm so glad you're here. And she was one of the first ones that really, you know, I mean, they all kind of got it, but she really let me know that she understood. So it was quite a situation. Her office is where I was at when I ran into the doctor that actually sewed this patch under my eye, and told me that I'd already died twice before she did the surgery that stitched this eye, this patch in permanently under my eye. And so when I saw her yesterday, she was just like, wow, you're a miracle. You are a miracle. And, yes. And so it was pretty cool, but I have some muscular issues with this, the damage, and we're going to try to correct those maybe with glasses. So who knows, you may, sometime in the next year, you may see me wearing glasses and go, why is Pastor wearing glasses? Well, it's because we're trying to fix this without surgery. We'll see what happens.
Well, the specific challenge is, if I remember correctly, is that because you have your tear duct kind of, and you've got a lot of moisture that ends up pooling there.
Yep.
And as a result, it attracts all sorts of weird critters and stuff that want to get at the moisture. And it's it's quite the irritant and not very healthy. Right. And so as a result, it isn't just cosmetic. It is also dealing with a real problem where your eye functions, but because of the way the eye works for cleansing, you don't have the same capacity to keep your eye moist.
Right.
Because you can't move your eyelid up. The bottom part up. So there's a lot of actual, it's not just, you know, cosmetic. It's
right.
Some well, real,
and the eye is just,
reasons.
And the eye is just off center. And she saw that yesterday, which when I get tired will cause some double vision. And then in addition to that, it causes, it's like, you know, if you're taking aim, like, you know, and you kind of, you know, you're not supposed to close an eye, but you are supposed to force yourself to look out of the eye that's looking down the barrel.
Right.
Yeah. Well, my left eye, because of how it's numb and so on, doesn't want to close. So it takes over as the dominant eye, and it's also slightly off center, which causes everything to have to work twice as hard, which just, it drains the energy out of me.
Well, and I'm going to just say, given where you were 6 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, it's that the fact that we're now coming down to talking about an eye problem, which you can see out of, but
yeah.
but an eye problem, is pretty amazing, because, you know, we're not talking about the fact that you are, you know, confined to a wheelchair all the time, because you can get up. You can move around, not as robustly as, you know, as you might like, and you might be able to do at some point in the future, but you have the capacity to stand up.
Yeah.
You have the capacity. You're not confined to the challenges that people in wheelchairs have in doing basic stuff, like going to the bathroom. And so it is a, there is a, the overall miracle of your recovery is amazing. And the fact that we're now dealing with, gee, your eyes out of, is a little bit out of alignment, and we're, we've got to make it so you can, the eye structure functions, tells you just how much we've now narrowed down the problems to things that 5 years ago were like incidental kind of things that you're sitting there going, well, maybe sometime in the future we might be able to deal with that. But right now, let's deal with the stuff that's important. And so it is really a testimony to the miracle that is your being alive and being able to share your testimony.
Yep. No, it is. Well, and I still, you know, my feet are numb, so my balance is challenged because I don't have any connectivity to the ground. And you know, so there's no, just stuff, not to minimize what you're saying, but you're right. And, but when you look at, you know, you can look at, you know, the cup, and you can say, well, you know, my cup is definitely, on the upside of half full. Okay.
Yeah. Your cup is 90% full right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. And I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful for that. All right. Let's transition over. I want to get in, our conversation about, what's going on in DC and up on the Hill. Cause there's a lot that's going on there. I guess McCarthy is in, some battles over a number of different issues. We just had the censorship vote. Thomas Massie is under assault again, and I'm not really clear on what exactly it is that he supposedly did this time, although I know that he, you know, got blasted because of the it was basically the mandate vote. He voted against the mandates when Trump negotiated all that, and quite frankly, President Trump was wrong. He was wrong. He was on the wrong side of that. You know, when you're wrong, you're wrong. And to sit there and argue and beat somebody up or anybody up, When the position, you know, and Wayne Allyn Root, by the way, to his credit, Wayne is a huge supporter of President Trump. But he told me, and he said it on my show, he says it on his own show, when it comes to the vaccines, President Trump was wrong. And he needs to admit that he made a mistake and that that was wrong. And all he needs to do is say, yeah, I listened to Fauci, I listened to Burker, whatever, however you pronunciate her name. And the woman, how do you say her name?
Deborah Birx.
Deborah Birx admitted in her book that she lied to the president. So all he needs to say is, yeah, they lied to me and I believed it. Somehow in his machination, for him to admit that he believed a lie is somehow reduces him. That's not true.
Let's just deal with the vaccine mandates, though, because if you remember correctly, the vaccine wasn't even made available to the public until December of 2020, at the end of his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
The vaccine mandates went into effect during the Biden administration. Okay, the Biden administration is who put vaccine mandates into place, not the Trump administration. The Trump administration, if you're going to blame Trump for anything, you can blame Trump because he listened to them and he, in fact, went and said, okay, well, we're going to allow for the short-term economic shutdown in order to flatten the curve. And he took that advice, which had economic and personal freedom consequences. But in terms of vaccines, he promoted the vaccine. They accelerated the development of the vaccine. When you accelerate the development, you know there's going to be more risks involved. But the vaccine mandates themselves came out of the Biden administration. The shutdown of the continued shutdown of schools over time came out of the Biden administration. Mask mandates came out of the Biden administration. And as a result, you had a although the mask mandates were probably during Trump, were coming out of Fauci, coming out of
it was the $2 trillion coronavirus relief package.
Right.
And in there, and in that package, there were mandates.
Yeah. Well, no, there were.
And Massey voted against it.
And he should have. And that was a good thing.
And Trump kind of went ballistic on him and said he should be thrown out of the Republican Party for voting against it.
Well, and listen, where Tom Massey's gotten into trouble recently has been because Massey's always been an independent guy, and that's a good thing. I wish they were more of them were independent guys and gals. But where he got in trouble recently was voting with McCarthy on the spending deal, the debt ceiling deal, in the Rules Committee. And as a result of voting with McCarthy on the Rules Committee, he ended up opening the door for a lot less cuts than many of the Republicans had hoped to get. So that's where he's come into fire recently. But I think, you know, you get down to it, Trump does have to deal with, he's kind of caught in the middle in terms of the vaccine. You've got the left who said, well, you didn't do anything in terms of, it's as if he didn't do anything for the full year, 9 months to deal with COVID. And as if he was just sitting there saying, oh, let COVID run amok. This is after he got attacked for shutting down flights from China because he was trying to block COVID and slow COVID's growth coming across the ocean. So you have so everything he did is it was attacked by the left as being not doing anything.
Yep.
And everything he did was attacked by the right as being too much.
Yeah.
And as a result, he was kind of stuck in the middle trying to do the best he could in a crisis that nobody faced in 100 years. And with advisors, quite honestly, who didn't have his best interests at heart.
That's the key.
The person who bears, but really needs to be answered questions about this is another candidate for president. And that's the vice president who was put in charge of the coronavirus task force and was, in fact, rubber stamping the Birx and Fauci recommendations through the task force.
Yep.
And so Mike Pence is the one who was put in charge of that relatively early during the crisis in June, July. And to manage the various aspects of the intergovernmental workings and the like, and to be a vetting service for the recommendations of the scientists. Trump, on the other hand, was meeting with scientists who were outside of Fauci, outside of Birx. He took a lot of grief for meeting with guys like Scott Atlas and others who were sitting there saying, wait a second, this is the wrong way to go.
Yep.
He was meeting with people coming up with other alternative solutions, with actually focusing on treatments rather than isolation. And so Trump was the one who was pushing treatments all along, and he was seeking. You know, we've got to get. What was he saying at the end of his administration? We have to figure out how to live with this rather than being in it. You know, trying to isolate ourselves. So Donald Trump used the bully pulpit pretty strongly to try to change the nation attitude. And quite honestly, I was heavily involved early on when they shut down the economy. And he said, oh, we're going to try to have the economy up and running by Easter. It was April 7th in 2020.
Yeah.
I sat there and held him accountable. We went out and we got over 100 videos of small businesses who were being destroyed based on the government shutdown.
Yeah.
And just peppered the White House with those videos and spent time talking to high-ranking people saying, we got to open the economy. We got to open the economy. You're destroying small business all over America.
I remember because you were on this show talking about that.
100% right. Yep. And so I mean, while I may sound like I'm defending Trump, I will tell you, I spent a lot of time pushing them. And I got told directly by the Trump administration, get on message. That's not our message. And I said, well, it needs to be your message because you're destroying. What you're doing is destroying small businesses across America, the backbone of America. You know, the Walmarts and the Amazons are going to be great. You're destroying the guys who actually vote Republican. You're destroying the people who
build this country, the people who provide right. the jobs in this country, and you darn well better stop doing that. So we had some sharp exchanges on that, and I provided them the proof. We went and we had – they set up a business council, and it basically stacked it with a bunch of big businesses. And I immediately yelled at them and said, no, you have to have small businesses on there. People, entrepreneurs, people are actually bearing the brunt of this.
Right.
And there's big – and their big business council went away because, you know, I provided them with a bunch of names. So trust me, there was a war going on. And there was a lot of different ideas on how things should be done. Yeah. And ultimately, so, Donald Trump reopened the country well before any of those big wig advisors thought he should. And he opened it early. He said, listen, we're done with this. We're reopening. And the economic recovery, why we only had 2 months of really disastrous unemployment, and he had a V-shaped recovery that went up about two-thirds of mm-hmm. the way up from where it started, was because he reopened it almost immediately, and that created opportunities in states like Texas, Florida, and state southern, basically red states that opened right. their economies.
Right.
And the reason you didn't get the whole way up was because the blue states said, for political purposes, their governor said, we're not reopening because we don't want Donald Trump to get the credit.
Right. I understand. I understand. And again, I'm not castigating or putting all of any blame on President Trump. There is that area where some things, but you know what, we can all that's all I'm
great.
Saying
yeah, we're great if you that's showed some humility yeah. and said, listen, we worked in really hard times, we were making decisions and really with a lot of different information, and our objective was to make sure that America didn't die of this virus. And then once it became clear that wasn't going to happen, we did everything we could to reopen it. Mm-hmm. And the vaccine, I would not apologize for the vaccine if I were him. I would say, listen, we fast-tracked the vaccine. There's no doubt. There were extra risks as a result. You know, it turns out that the vaccine wasn't as good as we'd hoped it would be. But the fact of the matter is the vaccine did, and just a lot more, some people died from the vaccine, but overall, I still believe that the vaccine was had more good than bad. That's something he can say.
I'll have to say that I don't agree that the vaccine has done more and every day, every single day, we are seeing video evidence. I had Thomas Haviland on, and maybe you ought to interview Thomas Haviland. Thomas Haviland investigated the film Sudden Death that uh-huh. Stu Peters was a part of and spoke to embalmers all across the country. And every single one of them validated what's in there, that they are finding things in bodies after 2021 that they've never, ever, ever seen before.
And I think that that would be I think that that would be a good thing for Donald Trump to be able to say, listen, I think we need to take a look at what the effects of the vaccine were and really get to the bottom of that. And it would be wise for him to say that. But he can't back away from the fact that he did fast track the vaccine, because based on everything he knew, that was the hope of getting everything back to normal and trying to defeat this. And
I understand,
was the mandating. Here's the problem. It was the mandating of the vaccine that was the problem. When you get down to it, the vaccine had problems. People knew it. When you say you lose your job if you're not going to take this, your kid can't go to school if they're not going to take this. When you compel everybody to take it, unless they're willing to stand up and say, no, I'm willing to not get on a plane, I'm willing to not to basically self-isolate because of it, and to become a social pariah because of it,
I had a nurse on yesterday, okay, who gave a valiant interview with me. Difficult for her to even speak now.
Right.
Provided palliative care. And her patients, which included patients all across the country, elderly people in these care facilities were completely and totally isolated from the world, shut off from the world, from coast to coast.
I know. Well, and ironically, the places where they, and then they were all exposed in many states like New York, they were then exposed to the virus by a governor who shoved patients with the virus into the old folks' homes and basically created a massive death rate in his own state as a result, killed off the Medicaid recipients. Yeah. You know, that was what they did. And I'm just being very blunt. The people who were in the public hospitals that were supported by the government, that were Medicaid hospitals, got exposed to COVID in a lot of Democrat states, because even though they knew that old people were most susceptible, they kept cramming people with COVID into those hospitals and caused the death rate to go up.
Well, and Rick, she testified yesterday too on this program that they forced the elderly, if they wanted to mingle even amongst themselves, they had to take the shot.
Yep.
And the spread of the illness because of the shot, whatever complications it created, were magnified in those facilities to those elderly people that were forced to either sit in their rooms by themselves with no outside contact or take the shot, and then they could mingle, but only with the people in their facility still for many months.
Yeah. And the abuse of the elder abuse that occurred was
horrific,
unconscionable,
horrific.
And the child abuse that occurred.
Yep.
By denying our kids the ability to go to school, the ability, and essentially, their education, effectively that child abuse that occurred, we're still bearing the fruit of, because the poison fruit of, because the test results of they are being reported right now tell us that the kids are still, by and large, a full grade behind where they should be. And it's all due to the isolation from COVID and the policies
and,
that were
we're going to run out of time here, but just on the VAC side of this, I've had Dr. Judy Mikovits on the program and talked in depth with her. I've had Dr. Peter McCullough on the program and talked in depth with him. I've had Dr. Syed Haider on the program and talked in depth with him. I've had several others on the program too. And Dr. Judy told Anthony Fauci years ago via her study on HIV and AIDS that there was a problem with how they were mixing animal blood into the vaccine going way, way back, that was causing Alzheimer's, that was causing Parkinson's disease, that was causing autism, all of these different things. And she presented the findings. Initially, they celebrated her findings. Then the insurance companies got a hold of it. The vax companies got a hold of it. And they were like, oh, my God, we're going to have all this liability. Quash this. And Fauci quashed the information. And yeah, we have all true. Paid a price for it. That's 100%
true. And it's in the last second, I think that's going back to Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump needs to sit there and say, listen, we were in a crisis. We did the best we could, but now we have to clean up the pieces and really hold people accountable who were lying and were deliberately misleading the American public and the American government on the actions that can be taken. Yeah. And Deborah Birx, with her book saying she deliberately lied to the
decision
makers, should be first and foremost in line for being held accountable.
Yep.
So I think that's what he needs to do. Take responsibility for what he did, and say, and when I get there, having done this, we now have to hold those people responsible who misled the government and embarked on policies that were self-serving and a cover-up.
This is Adam Mundall with State Air. We need people on radio willing to speak about the Bible, the Constitution, and putting God back in our nation again. So join me in sponsoring Chosen Generation and Pastor Greg. Call him today at 830-446-4444.
830-446-3624. That's 830-446-3624. This has blessed my business and it will bless yours.